Hello and welcome to the Eevee Cafe Takeaway. Welcome back if you're coming having listened to us before, but this time it's going to be a podcast with a little bit of a difference, because most weeks I'm joined by one of the wonderful members of the Eevee Cafe team, but not this week. It's just me and an innovator, a pioneer, and a collaborator in our industry, and I'm extremely excited to be talking today with Naomi Jane Nye of Drax. Naomi, welcome to you.
Thank you so much, Paul. It's lovely to be here.
It's a shame we're not in a place, isn't it? I think one of these days we could be in a place where we could have a nice cup of coffee. People come to the Eevee Cafe, of course, all the time and say, where's the coffee?
I remember back in those days during COVID. No, those Wednesday lunchtimes, and I used to sit and have my lunch and listen in, and yeah, great.
Fantastic. It was a great time in some ways. I know it was awful for many people, and it was a real challenging time. But it was a time when we all hunkered down, really, didn't we? And kind of, yeah, we carried on the conversation. And it's funny, because I think it's important really to highlight the caliber of the person that I'm talking to today in you, Naomi, because in 2020 it was an important year for you, wasn't it? You got a piece of recognition about you as a woman in our industry. Tell me a little bit about that, just to give everybody a bit of a flavour of the woman Naomi Nye.
Yeah, that was actually, oh, you've done some research. That was a bit of a surprise, I think, when I got that. I was working for Alfen at the time, and I was actually over in the Netherlands. We were having kind of our quarterly meetings. So I used to go over there for a week and have a week over there. And I was working with a lovely guy called Alex Earle, and he basically shared with me that I'd got this accolade. And it was lovely. I think it was when they first started doing it, of the women in EV and kind of celebrating women in EV and the roles that they were taking. So they split them down to different categories. And yeah, it was lovely. It was a really nice kind of surprise, because I feel like I've been doing this for a little while now. And for me personally, I think I feel much more comfortable kind of behind the scenes kind of doing things. So, you know, to be put at the front of the things and kind of getting a bit of recognition was really nice in one respect, but actually a bit humbling in another. So, yeah, it was lovely. Mm.
And so it was, I think I'm right in thinking it was one of the most influential women in EV in the year 2020.
Do you know what? I can't even remember what the title was.
I can't remember.
Yeah, I can't remember. Yeah, I just remember it was, yeah, Alex sharing it and how lovely it was. And yeah, it was great.
Great, a great feeling. And when you say humbling, what do you mean?
Well, I think a lot of people kind of feel this, right? You just do what you do. And for me, I get kind of satisfaction through doing what I'm doing on a daily basis, you know, working with customers and kind of seeing, you know, results come to fruition, and, you know, you're working really hard on projects and things like that. So you're kind of in that moment. You don't think about necessarily that bigger picture. And then for me, you know, when I go to shows and events and it's about the people and, you know, how these different people come together and different businesses come together. And, you know, we had it recently, didn't we, last week with the Fleet Show and being part of that kind of village environment and that collaboration piece. And I think it's lovely. It's really lovely. But you just, you know, you don't kind of see yourself as sort of anything else other than you're just dealing with customers and you're doing your own little role. And then you realize that actually lots of people kind of know you or want to come and talk to you or, you know, want to hear what you've got to say. And yeah, and that for me is the humbling part of it, I think.
Yeah. I totally understand that. I mean, personally, I always have wondered why me, or what would anybody gain out of something from me. I mean, sometimes it's imposter syndrome, sometimes it's true humility and recognizing that there's people around you. But I mean, it's worth us understanding, Naomi, what you do today. I mean, you just sort of described a little bit of your role there, but what is it that you do for Drax, and how does that sort of live out in your daily life?
Yeah, so I work on the kind of commercial retail side of the business within Drax in an area called Drax Energy Solutions. And within that, we are really customer facing, supporting customers on their decarbonization journey and what that looks like. So that can be anything from, you know, supplying renewable energy, and we have a team that supplies that power for those customers. I sit on the electric vehicles side of the business. So we're really supporting with electrification of vehicles, and we offer a full end-to-end turnkey solution. So with that, we are a charge point operator. We do everything in-house. So we look at everything from groundwork, civils, design, you know, all the way through to full service and maintenance. And we have some really strict kind of SLAs, KPIs in place. So it's really about getting the right infrastructure in the right places, doing the right thing. So it's really supporting customers and making sure it fits in their business plans model, but also that it's flexible and future-proof as well, because it's all about that ongoing partnership. And then thinking about those assets that are going into the ground as assets, you know, being able to use them. So can you then use them for smart charging, flexibility services? Can you make the most of the energy that's being provided? So it's that real kind of holistic approach to it, I think. And that can be supporting customers, anything from that initial fleet assessment, you know, understanding, can they actually electrify? You know, there's still a lot of misconceptions, I think, around electric vehicles. I think, as we both know, there's lots of, you know, myths out there that we need to try and dispel and get rid of. And I think from businesses, I think for them, that starting that process, A, who does it sit with? You know, it's really, really difficult. How do they go about doing it? And then going on that education piece to make sure that what they're doing is going to work for them and going to work for them in the longer term. So that's really where I sit, is kind of supporting customers on that side of it. Keeping those kind of partnerships and relationships going.
And I'd like to come back to a bit more of that in a minute or two. But you mentioned earlier that you've been doing this a long time. Now, actually, EV's not been around for a long time. What does a long time look? Because I'm aware that it was really pretty early doors from an electric vehicle and electric transition perspective.
Yeah. So I think that's it. I think for me, I see this still as a very new industry. We're still learning. There's lots of changes. And I think that's the exciting part about it, right? So yeah, technology is changing, the industry is changing, the regulations are changing, and kind of coming in and backfilling some of those holes. So I kind of fell into it a little bit. I would love to say, Paul, that, you know, it was my passion from day one. It wasn't. I actually started off, so I left university and went into finance and then did financial exams and became a financial advisor. So that was really kind of my background. And I was doing that for a number of years. We were living in Southampton originally, and we moved from there up to Lincolnshire. We had two small children, and I became independent as a financial advisor, because it kind of worked for, you know, the family life and being able to juggle things and still do the school runs and all that kind of thing. So, so I was self-employed doing that. What I did find, though, was I was working a huge amount of hours, because I was working as an independent. You had to know everything about everyone. So I was working during the day around school times, you know, making sure that I was completely up to speed with everything that was in the market, right? You know, making sure my CPDs, everything like that, were up to date. And then I was seeing customers when they weren't at work. So that was either in the evenings or at weekends. Mm. And that had a bit of an effect. And then my husband changed career, where he was putting himself through a separate degree. So he was kind of working, being self-employed, you have, you know, that little bit more pressure. Yep. That you're thinking about things, and two small children that, you know, you've got bolognese in one hand, homework in the other, and you're trying to cradle your phone and have various conversations. So, you know, a bit of an octopus thing going on. So yeah. I just thought, you know, maybe it's time for a bit of a change. My dad got poorly at the time. He was diagnosed with cancer, and I was kind of backwards and forwards to the hospital with him and treatment and things. So I think it was just everything came at once, and everything just suddenly got a bit, hang on, I'm on this big hamster wheel and I probably need to get off. So, I looked, just thinking, well, I don't know what to do. You know, I've done finance the whole time. I don't know what I want to do for a career. So I'll get a little 9-to-5 job and I'll think about it. and give myself just a little break, you know, just breathe for a while. I got this little 9-to-5 job with a company called Rolex. They were moving offices literally to the village next to where I live. And I thought, oh, that's quite handy. So I'll go in there and do sales. I did think about getting a job in a bakery or something, but I thought that probably wouldn't be too good for my health and was maybe a little bit too pedestrian, you know, coming from this really pressurized kind of role. And stopping completely. I thought that's going a bit too far. So I joined them in sales, and it was working in their leisure division. So caravan sites, marinas, putting in electrical infrastructure. So that's where then I started learning about, you know, the cabling and voltage drops and feeder pillars and, you know, all this different safety equipment, and then designing these out. And the marinas were nice and easy because there were lots of straight lines. And the caravan sites were a bit more difficult because you had to go around trees and over hills, and going out and sort of seeing customers in those environments was lovely. You know, I went to some amazing locations, and I'm a real people person, so I love kind of chatting to people. And I just really, really enjoyed it, really enjoyed it. And at the time, Rolex was also thinking about moving into this new market called the EV space that was kind of coming through with electric vehicles. There were some grants out through ODEV at the time. I think the domestic one was you could basically put it in completely free, and there was no, you know, you didn't have to have a car and you didn't have to have a driveway. And there were random charge points turning up on the sides of flats, you know, at various different locations throughout the flat. So they built a product called the Wall Pod, and that was actually a caravan hookup box that used to go on the lodges. I got involved at that kind of stage, and they moved into the domestic market. And then I stayed in the leisure side. I ended up being the general manager of that division and kind of doing that. And then, they asked me to move in because I was dealing with a lot of corporate customers there and set up the corporate side of the EV. So I did that, and I worked with UK Power Networks and UPS and DPD and all these great customers at their very early start. Which was great. So, and it was all very new, you know, it was all very exciting. And I think it was just such a nice place to be. And I think everyone was kind of learning at the same time as well. So, it was really, really interesting. And it was completely new to me. And I loved it, absolutely loved it. Yeah, the more I got into it, the more, you know, you learn about it, and the more questions that you have, and the more answers that you have, the more questions that you were then asking. So, it just got bigger and bigger.
Well, I think it were really astute to see the whole thing as a, as an exciting time, because, you know, not everybody did, right? You know, it's like, to really see that this change was happening, which was, of course, really kind of ratified in 2020 with, you know, love him or hate him, Boris Johnson's 10-point green plan, which actually gave us a really good roadmap, and actually just went, do you know what? This, you're on the right track, everybody. This, let's crack on and do this. But up until that point, you would be forgiven for thinking that anybody doing EV, albeit it's an interesting sort of transitional area, isn't it? Because hookup and marine and all that sort of stuff was already a thing with electric. So the electric was sort of, and I think that transit, so Rolex were perfectly placed. I didn't realize that was how that all came about.
I mean, it was when you look at the infrastructure and the underlying infrastructure, actually it's very similar. And when they were looking at building the units, I mean, it was changing out some components. Back in the day, it was literally DIN rail components. And, you know, you clip one out and you clipped another one in, and they kind of built this comms, mode 3 comms unit. And I remember Kieran at the time, you know, he was very insistent that when I moved into the EV space, that I had to learn all the electrical side of it. So I had to know IEC 62196 and J1772. And, you know, I had to know all those technical things, which I think put me in really good stead right at the beginning. It was, you know, what electrical regulations does it fall under, because that was the that was the main foundation of you know, you were putting hardware in the ground and it had to work and it had to you know, be safe and secure and all these things. And then it was only as you then kind of move through that and through those questions and go, well, okay, that's great, we've got a piece of hardware and you plug the car in and that works, but now how do we look after it, who pays for it, you know, who do we know who's using it? And then it just kind of grew legs and got bigger and bigger that way. So, it was a really interesting time.
Yeah, I mean, a really interesting time, really exciting time. And I think, you know, that whole, because Rolex, for me, were one of the first charge points that I knew about, and probably, I'm not sure it was used. I actually think it was Alphen I first used, which of course you had some history with too. This is my whole life of an electric is all around you. It's all your fault.
So yeah, I moved to Alphen in 2018. And the reason I moved, I think, because the customers that I was talking to and being in that kind of corporate space and understanding those challenges, I think that they were just starting to figure out and starting to think about. And I thought where I was, I couldn't take all of those boxes at that point. And I had the opportunity to move over to Alphen, and Alphen was a different kind of kit. You know, the Europeans built it in a different way. So it was open platform from day one. They were much more about kind of the connectivity and the data and the network and being able to access different back offices and different software, and then also use that software to upgrade the hardware. So you could put in a piece of kit that was quite basic, but you could upgrade it through license keys and make it all singing and all dancing. So you could grow with the customer. And that really spoke to me, I think, you know, because for me, it's about being that, you know, customer centric and understanding what they need and kind of ticking those boxes and fulfilling those needs. So that side of it was really important for me. And I learned an awful lot there around that technology part.
And did, I mean, I'm sort of, as I'm listening to you, and we've talked about, we've used an acronym or two, which is very naughty, Naomi, you should know better. So you mentioned CPD, and I know what I think CPD is, but I don't think it's what you meant it as, to do with your...
Yeah, so it's professional development. So making sure you had to have a number of points over the year. So it's making sure that you're keeping up with your training, basically.
Right. In that context, is what I thought. But and it seems that you've got like this attention to detail and legislation and making sure that you've got things right, backed up with this real customer centric kind of element. I think you speak to that people person bit that you talked about earlier. Talk to me about how Naomi became Naomi, because, you know, that's a journey, right? And to be that kind of people person. So if John was here, he'd be talking about your time in Southampton and the university and that sort of stuff, because he's a Southampton boy. So a little nod to Big JC. You know, where did you grow up and how was school for you? How did you get to that point of university? You know, were you going home to Lincolnshire or did you always live in Southampton? All those questions.
Yeah, so... Blimey, right. So I grew up in a place called Taplow, kind of in between Slough and Maidenhead in Berkshire.
I know it.
That's where I kind of grew up. But my parents did move around. So they moved down to the New Forest. I lived in the New Forest for nearly 2 years. So, and then we moved from there up to Lincolnshire because my parents moved again. So I ended up going to three different kind of secondary schools. I was always the new girl. But it was great because, you know, I like people and I like meeting new people, and that didn't bother me at all. And then I was doing my A-levels, but I had a bit of an experience when I was 16. So I was involved in quite a bad car accident when I was 16, and I fractured a couple of bones in my neck, and I lost the use of my arms and legs. So it was quite quite a trying time, shall we say. So that was just at the beginning of my A-levels, I think it must have been the lower six. And going through that kind of experience at a very young age, I think probably for me, I think it's one of the best things that could have ever happened to me. And I know that sounds really bizarre.
I know that does sound really bizarre.
But for me, it taught me so much. And I think, you know, for a very long period of time, I was just completely still, you know, for quite
I mean,
quite
how
a few
long
weeks,
are we talking
if not
here?
Months.
Weeks
so
or
I
months?
Think,
wow.
I think I was in hospital for about 3 months. It was quite a long time. So the damage that was done to my arms and legs was nerve damage rather than from the fracture in my neck. So I broke two or three bones in my neck. Mm. So I had to be very, very still while that kind of healed and sorted. And so I'd be in this hospital bed, and they would come in and they draw you to one side and then they draw you to the other, and everything else was just kind of done. And you just stared at the ceiling because, you know, back in the day, there wasn't mobile phones or iPads or anything like that. And I couldn't see the TV because I was looking up. So I was literally... I was literally just staring at this ceiling for weeks. And I was really lucky. I had lots of lovely people coming and see me the whole time. But they would come in and see you and they'd go like this, oh, hi, how are you? And they'd like touch your arm, shake your arm, because they'd want to come in like, almost give you a hug. And I used to dread it. Every single time I'd be like, oh, that hurts so much.
Oh, it used to hurt.
Oh, God, the pain. The pain in my arms. That was the worst thing. Oh, it was the pain because where it was nerve.
So you couldn't move them, but they hurt still. Right.
Yeah, because it was the nerve damage. It was all like them firing up. So the car was actually on top. I was kind of out of the window and the car was on top of my arms. But because I was down a dike at the time, my arms had sunk into the mud, which saved them. But obviously with the weight of the car on top, they were, quite damaged. So, so I went through that kind of process, but it really taught me how to be still, you know, how to just think and reflect and... You know, my mum, bless her, she didn't leave my side the whole time. And again, she would have a little giggling fit every now and again, because I think that's just how we've always coped with stuff. You know, we just laugh about things. So, she kept like having a little giggling fit, and then she'd jog my arm or like slap me or whatever. And I'd go, oh my God, you're doing it again, which would make her laugh even more. I just think, this isn't funny. This is not funny. This is not a nice
funny
time.
At all.
And then, kind of coming around from that and having to learn to just even like being able to start moving upright, you know, having a pillow and, you know, the sickness and the dizziness and, it was awful. And then I think, you know, getting that feeling back in arms and legs and kind of making those movements again and not learning to walk again, but getting that power, that pressure back and that strength back, I think was really important. And then I just fell over a lot. I fell over. All the time. I think I spent more time sitting on the floor than I did anything else. So again, I think for me at the age of 16, I was like, well, you know, you fall over and then you get up again and you fall over and you get up again and you just keep trying and you keep going and you just keep doing stuff because you've got to, right? So I think for me at the age of 16, that was quite a big lesson that I sort of learned. And then I went back to school because I was determined I didn't want to go back and have to redo another year or whatever. I wanted to be with my friends and my friend set. So I ended up doing my A-levels in a year. And then, I moved back down from Lincolnshire to get to university in Southampton, where I still fell over a lot right the way through to probably early 30s.
Which is not funny at all, everybody. It really isn't, but it does sound very funny.
People that fall over is the funniest thing in the world. And the thing is, you never used to trip. It would just be like a drop. And you sort of find yourself sat in the middle of the road thinking, right, you just need to get up. And you'd get the strangest looks from people. You know, they'd be like, what's she doing? And just think, I'm just gonna give myself a minute.
Did you find a cause for that? Was it like a nerve shock thing or something?
Yeah, it was just all nervous damage. So it was where the nerves, it was like pressing where they'd fractured. It was pressing on the...
Right.
Nervous part of your spine, I guess. So you just lose power. And I still get it now with my arms. I completely lose power and end up dropping things and I'm a bit clumsy. But, you know, I'm going to be 50 next year. So the fact that I'm up and about and I'm doing stuff, it's fine.
Yeah, 100%.
So, it was quite a strange experience, but it taught me so much at a very young age. And I think from there as well, I think it actually probably gave me quite a lot of confidence. Because, you know, you had to do stuff and that I could do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and everything was a challenge, but you could do it. You could get over it. And, you know, even in the worst times, things do get better. You know, so all those kind of lessons, I think I probably learned very quickly, you know, at a very young age. So I think for me, I think it did me a lot of good. I also think... it probably gave me a bit of a zest for life, I guess, but a zest for different opportunities and trying different things. And that's not always been the best, you know, because I do have a habit of saying yes quite a lot. Yeah, I'll do that. Yeah, I'll give that a go. Yeah, I'll try that. And then I'm like, why am I here? What am I doing? Whose idea was this?
Yours.
So I think, you know, I think that fear of the unknown, that fear of failing, that fear of, I don't know, just kind of putting yourself out there and making a bit of a fool of yourself. I think for me, I'm just like, yeah, well, you know, that's fine. I can do that.
I'll probably fall over in a minute. It'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly. I had a big cage thing on for a while, which, you know, wasn't the best when you're 16, 17 years old. Constantly falling over. It was a bit of a struggle. But yeah, so I think that had a massive kind of effect on me personally, I guess.
And it sounds that we often ask the question in our podcast, one, you know, think back to one of your darkest times. But as I'm reflecting on it now, and perhaps as you do now, it looks like that whilst it was clearly, you know, a very traumatic time, very difficult time. I mean, goodness knows what must have been going through your head as you were under a car in a dike, which, you know,
to be honest, I don't remember
many.
It. I don't remember it at all. I woke up at various stages and then I think just went again. So I don't really remember that actual part of it at all. I remember being cold and I remember my foot being in water and then I was like, oh, that's a bit strange. Yeah, it's very.
So we're really lucky to have you, aren't we, really?
Well, yeah, I think it didn't go quite so well for some of the other people involved.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it just makes you realize that, you know, things happen and, you know, things change and they change really fast. So you've just got to make the most of everything. You've got to make the most of every day. You've got to make the most of, you know, whatever you can do. And for me, that I think is just translated into everything that I try and do, you know, make the most of it, do the best you can at it, work as hard as you can and enjoy it mostly. Because, you know, just think about, what you've got in front of you and go from there.
Wow. So I'm sensing that there was, and I don't want to delve, but I'm sensing that there was a much tougher side to that whole experience than perhaps you've just related, which really kind of is foundational for you today in terms of really living the best part of your life today.
Yeah, I think so. And I think for me, it just translates into everything that, you know, you do and that you achieve. And, you know, I think you're just so grateful for everything. And I kind of look at things now and I have this, you know, this five rule. You've probably heard of the five rule before. And you think, you know, when something happens, if something happens, you kind of go, right, is this really going to bother me in 5 minutes? Is it going to bother me in 5 hours, in 5 days? And then, am I leveling the right reaction to it? And the only time I think that's really failed is around the kids. where you just kind of go, right, that's enough now. That's enough. you know, kind of thinking of things of just maybe in a slightly different way. Maybe it's just the way my brain got rewired. I don't know.
Tell me about your kids. You've got two kids, I think, and brace yourself for this, people. Naomi, everybody, is a grandma.
Yes.
Absolutely unbelievable. Yeah. I can't believe that. You don't look anywhere near old enough.
He is such a little puppet. So I've got two boys. The eldest is 27. So he's the father of said grandchild. Mm-hmm. And the youngest will be 21 shortly. And he's at university. So he's back down in Winchester just doing his last year down there. So, and then we've got lovely little Theo, who's 3 and is just a joy. And I always said, you know, I'm never going to be that grandparent that, you know, lets them do whatever they like. He comes to the house, I'm like, Theo, do whatever you like. Whatever you like. You eat what you like. You want ice cream? Come on, Grandma, get you ice cream.
He's E-numbers. Have some E-numbers. Take them home to Mummy and Daddy. There you go.
Yeah. Whatever you want. Good.
Oh, brilliant. So, but it's an important aspect because I think not everybody kind of calls out the outside of work bit of their life, particularly in things like LinkedIn or whatever. Talk to me about the outside of work bit of your life.
Yeah, so outside of work, it's really quite family based, you know. I've tried to have a bit of a change this year, because again, I think you end up on a bit of a hamster wheel. You know, when I was younger, I thought I could do everything. You know, I was superwoman. You know, I could just, that's fine. Yeah, that's fine. And this yes thing came into it. Take on it. Yeah, you want me to volunteer to do that? Yeah, it's fine. Full-time job. Yeah, I can do that. Kids, I can do that. You know, and I almost felt a bit like a Stepford wife, because I think you have these, you know, these kind of different pressures that often you put on yourself. They don't come from anywhere else. Mm. But I wanted to achieve everything I've always done. Like I said, I've always tried to do it to the best of my ability and achieve the best that I can, and be as successful and creative with it as I can. So I think I just took on a lot. And then, you know, things happen outside of that. I think when things happen to you, I think you deal with them so much better. I knew certainly if things happen to me, I deal with them, right? Because that's my thing and I'll just get on with it. But when things happen to people that are close to you, and you know, we've had a few kind of things around, you know, sort of mental health issues and these kind of things. I think I put a post out on LinkedIn that was a bit of a touch on that, because I do think it's important to share, and I do think it's important to let people know that, you know, other people are going through stuff. It's not all perfect and everything's not all rosy all the time, because, you know, that's how other people can relate and how you can maybe help and support other people on their journey. But yeah, so I had a bit of a change through some of that and just said, right, you know, we're just going to stop. We're just going to take time and we're going to, you know, not put ourselves under so much pressure. We don't need to have the perfect social life. We don't need to have, you know, perfect all the time, everything. We're just going to do what we want to do. And it was really nice, actually. Even like, we started New Year's Eve and we sat in New Year. And normally we'd have like party, or we'd be at friends, or we'd have, you know, part of a big celebration, because you think that's what you're supposed to do. And we sat in and we played board games and we sat in our pajamas. Literally, it was lovely. We had like a really nice meal. We played all these board games and we just had a really nice time, and we just took it back to basics, so that I think for everyone, it was just a bit of calm after the storm. And let's just, you know, rethink, recap and come back together. So family for me is really, really important. I love traveling. If I haven't got a holiday booked, then I get a bit antsy. I do need to make sure I've got somewhere to go at some point, because I just love, you know, even if it's just being in the car, the EV rally, doing that road trip, I loved it, you know, just because I was seeing different places that I hadn't seen. And I get quite excited about that. So that kind of thing. And then the other thing for me, I think outside of life, is I read as much as I can, which really annoys my husband, because he said, you know, I can literally be in a book and the house would be burning down and I'd be like, I'll just finish this chapter. I'll be with you in a minute. Because I do get really engrossed. So I either have now, well, I do, I have kind of three different things on the go. So I'll have, you know, the audio book in the car. I'll have the actual book, which will be at various points around the house. But even if I'm just stood cooking, you know, I'll squidge in a quick chapter. Kindle under the pillow. I'm terrible, for that. So I normally have three or four books on the go at any one time.
And what's your go-to when you're reading?
Anything and everything. That's the thing. I will read anything. Yeah, it depends. So I'll do like, I do like reading some different books, you know, particularly around kind of that whole self-improvement thing, you know, an audio book around that, or a bit of spiritual stuff, or, you know, answer some questions that, or give me some answers for some questions that I have. And then I do love just losing myself in a complete novel and a story and just being completely in a whole new world. I love that side of it as well. So yeah, lots of different things.
Amazing. And so that gives me the sort of a real view of the kind of person that turns up to work now. It feels to me like a very holistic person, a very engaged with the outcome for the customer person. It kind of tells me why you're in renewable energy, because it's a like almost a better form of energy. It's a more grounded, connected kind of energy than, you know, the stuff we get out of coal-fired power stations. I know we don't use them anymore, pretty much, which is great news. But so talk to me about what your, because obviously the Drax Energy Services, or Energy Solutions, sorry, and the electric vehicle services, kind of really brings together what Drax, sort of the energy generation kind of business, then kind of distributes. It just feels like a very connected kind of thing. So how does what can your customers expect from you and from your team that as you go about your business, what does that look like for Drax?
I think that's exactly it, Paul. I think it is that connected, joined up approach. And this is why I joined Drax. So I feel that every role that I've had in the industry, I feel like I've added an extra piece, you know, an extra piece of knowledge, an extra piece of the jigsaw puzzle that I can really help support customers with. And with Drax, that whole energy piece, which is the fuel that we're giving electric vehicles, right? Mm. Making sure that that energy is clean and that we're using our resources in a really responsible way, and that those assets that we are putting in the ground, those you know, because we're then having to hike up the energy usage for customers with electric vehicles, you know, suddenly we're turning a lot of offices, depots, you know, different places into fuel stations that weren't designed to be fuel stations. So how can we then manage that effectively and keep those resources and being responsible for those and making sure that we're doing the best that we can? So there's a number of ways we different do that. A, with the renewable side, making sure the energy is renewable and clean. B, when we're putting the assets in the ground, actually thinking about these are assets for a customer. These aren't just sockets that we're putting in the ground for a customer to use. They've got that full functionality and they're working for that. But are there ways that we can use them and more effectively? Can we use smart charging? Can we use load balancing? Can we think about those flexibility services, you know, moving into kind of that B2G space and, you know, really kind of taking it to the next level in the future? And are we putting something in for a customer that is really giving them the most value and is going to operate the way that they need it to operate? Because a lot of the time, I think with customers, they don't really know what they're looking for now. Mm-hmm. They don't know what they need, certainly now. And then you kind of think, well, you've got no idea what you're going to be looking at in 24 months or 36 months or in five years' time, you know, what that's going to look like there. So being able to really kind of, A, hold their hand through that whole process, making sure that they're comfortable with everything that we are, you know, taking all of those boxes there, but equally putting in something that's going to be really effective and valuable for them over the longer term, I think is really important.
Yeah. It's nice that you can come to you guys for the sort of end-to-end, I think you called it, solution. Because I think when we separate it out, we don't always get quite the right solution, do we? And I think, you know, even understanding the vehicles piece, you've been an EV driver for a long time, I know, and I think it really helps to have that personal experience. I mean, the EV rally was great because we got to rock up at, it was Selby, right? I'm right in thinking it was Selby Power Station.
Yeah, we did, yeah.
And they've got the big cooling towers and all of that kind of stuff. It's quite exciting. So I'm hopeful that one of these days we'll get up and get to go into the cooling towers and see these things that have been on our landscape for years, but you're doing something different with them, aren't you?
Yeah, so that's the largest decarbonisation project in Europe that's happening there at the moment. And that's really based around the bioenergy and carbon capture storage. So it's removing carbon from the atmosphere permanently. Really, really exciting stuff. I mean, for me, I must admit, a lot of it, you know, I kind of see this stuff and I get so inspired, you know, when I'm kind of seeing what is being done and how it's being done and the innovation that sits behind it. But from a technology side, I must admit, I'm a bit like, I've kind of gone over my head a little bit. But yeah, it's amazing. And the hydropower station that we have as well up at Cruachan, that has a whole visitor center. So, you know, we're welcoming people, come in, have a look, get involved. Yeah. And I can't wait to go up there. I haven't actually been up there yet, but I'm really looking forward to going up there and having a look around that because I've seen lots of pictures and it's stunning. And what they do there, you know, with a single drop of water and the amount of power that comes off of one drop of water, using it, you know, something like 80 times to generate 80 times the amount of power. It's, it's incredible stuff. Incredible stuff.
Sounds like an EV cafe outing to me.
It definitely does. Yes, by all means, we'll arrange it. We'll arrange it, Paul. We're on it.
Get that in the diary. Look out for the video, everybody, because there's a video coming of that one, that's for sure.
There you go.
My goodness. So, but it is incredible. And I love this, the idea that you talked to there about innovation, because, you know, people would be forgiven, like, 8 years ago for looking at a Rolex charger and going, what, that's it? How's that going to help? You know, would you just need hundreds of thousands of those? Then, you know, Alfen chargers, oh, we've got two in one now, and it's got a little screen on it, and it does all this kind of stuff. And now we're into big fridge-like things that, you know, deliver power at hundreds of kilowatts, you know, in what seems like minutes. Albeit we're told everybody it's hours. But that innovation journey, that acceleration of tech is quite incredible, isn't it? What's your experience of that?
I mean, it really is. Back in the day, like I say, it was literally a socket on a wall. That was it. And for me, I think it's the way the market has kind of moved as well. Like earlier, it was all about the hardware. Everything was about hardware and getting the right hardware in. And then it kind of had a bit of a shift, and it was about the software and how you control it and the back office, and everything was about back offices for a big time. And then it kind of moved again, and it's more about that data management and all these other different add-ons. So payment, how do we add that on? How do we add on, you know, these different like roaming services? And it just seems to be getting bigger and bigger each time, and it's growing. There's like different facets that are constantly being added. And I think that's what's so great is that as an industry, you know, the amount of people in this industry, and they're all kind of pulling together to try and come up with this successful solution. I know that at Drax, we work with a number of different partners that we bring in, you know, to add on these different bells and whistles, if you like, for customers to make sure that we're getting that full holistic approach. And kind of thinking about that. And I think the industry is just continuing to be very flexible. But the other thing I love, Paul, is that you've taken away, there is less of that kind of competition in the industry. Most other industries, you get, you know, a lot of competition between companies. And here it just feels like it, if it's the right solution, it works, you know? So everyone is very, I'm going to say the word again, collaborative. It is really important because that's the only way it's going to work. There isn't going to be a one solution fits all. You have to be quite dynamic and innovative in the way that you're thinking. Different companies have different business models, and you have to kind of adapt and work to them as well. And the other thing, we're also seeing lots of changes in the market. So particularly from the hardware side, you know, we've seen lots of people exiting the market, changing their business model, removing their software, updating their software that then doesn't work with older chargers. So it's trying to keep up with all of that as well. And it's making sure, I think, when I'm speaking to customers, that we're on kind of the front foot of all of that. So that they're talking to us, they can trust in us, they know that we're putting the right solution in the ground, we know that it's going to work with them, and that we're going to be able to make it work over the longer term. And that for me, it's about just really taking care of them and not just trying to put something in for the sake of putting something in. So I think that's probably where the experience comes in with the different hardware, you know, doing that kind of planning up front, doing that data analysis, really understanding what they're looking for, and then searching the market for it. And I guess that for me kind of goes back to my financial days where it was a similar model. You know, you talk to customers and you understand their needs and requirements. And I had this big responsibility that, you know, their investments were on my shoulders, and I was either going to make the money or lose the money. And, you know, obviously I wanted to make the money. So I had to keep it safe. You know, I had to make sure I'd done my homework. I had to make sure that, you know, I ticked all those boxes and that due diligence was there and those details were in place. And I think that's just kind of followed me through in this industry. And what I love about Drax is that is a natural, because obviously with Drax, you know, the health and safety, you know, owning the power stations, being part of that national critical infrastructure, that due diligence side is incredibly important, and it flows through in absolutely everything that Drax do.
Do you know what, Naomi? I've loved this conversation because I've heard your name for longer than I've known you. I remember you coming on to the EV Cafe, the chats, and there was, I think it was Sarah that knew you quite well, or maybe it was John, I forget, but you know, knew, oh, Naomi Nye's on, you know, and what I'm experiencing for that, because we've talked a few times at different events and different things, but I've never had the pleasure of being able to really get to know you. And everybody, I love these sorts of things. This is I'm a people person too. It's such a privilege, really, to talk to you and get to know you and really understand this journey that you've been on. And you know, I have a saying in life, weebles wobble but they don't fall down. But and, like that. And always speaks to just getting back up again, right? But yeah. there's another saying that comes, I think it's actually from the Bible, but it says a righteous man falls down 7 times but gets back up again. You know, there's this kind of phrase of kind of bouncing back, and you're the personification of that to me. And you've learned that really early on and sort of come all the way through this journey, which has been quite incredible. You know, just a journey of learning, a journey of empathy, a journey of family, of absorbing new things. It's quite incredible. And I feel very privileged. And I mean that absolutely sincerely. I'm very excited. And so I want to give you the privilege of one of our closing questions is always to hand a wand to you that you can wave and have. Sadly, it's only one wish, but
the genie in the lamp. Then that where I go, wishes. My wish is another 6 wishes, please. That's what I'd like. Thanks.
See, that's the clever wish, right? See, I should have thought of that. But yeah, no, you only get to wave your magic wand once, and you get to kind of change something. We're industry focused, yeah. So where we're at, how it's all going, what does the future look like, and how can you, with your magic wand, facilitate that future for you, for the industry, for Drax, however you want to wave it.
I think in terms of the future, it's a strange one, because I think when you're in the industry, you see all this fantastic stuff, right? You hear all this fantastic stuff, and you're surrounded by fantastic people. And I'm really lucky, you know, to work with some really, really fantastic people. But I think when I remove myself from that side of things, actually, you know, the questions that I'm being asked by customers are probably still the same questions that I was being asked 10 years ago. And so for me, I think it's very easy to forget, while we think we're very versatile and dynamic and we've got all this innovation and everything's, you know, going really well, actually, that customer on the end is probably thinking, well, where can I charge my car? How do I plug it in? It's really basic stuff. So for me, I think if I had a magic wand, I'd remove, for customers, I would remove a lot of the noise. I think there's a lot of noise in the industry, a lot of white noise, we see it all the time, right? With these EV myths and the fun and everything else that surrounds it. And it just completely takes it away from, you know, what I think is good for customers, good for the planet, good for the environment, you know, everything we're trying to do. That's what we have to remember, why we're trying to do it. And it amazes me that people are so against it. I was having lunch at the pub over the weekend, and there was a group of older guys, should we say, chatting. And they were having this conversation, and one went, well, I'd never have an electric car. And I was just, you know, I was on edge of my seat going, oh, just, yeah, hold my wine, let me over there. And she was like, no, it's just stop. Just stop, because let me think. But you kind of go, well, that chap has probably never been in an electric car. He's just heard about stuff. So for me, I think if I had that electric wand, I'd take all of that away. And I'd probably, you know, all the education and the good stuff that we're trying to do collectively as kind of professionals in this business, I'd really kind of try and emphasize that a bit more. Let's shout about that a bit more. Let's take all the nonsense away, and let's just give out the facts and try and get them out to as many people as we can, which is what we're all trying to do, right? That's what we're trying to do.
Indeed.
Let's just keep that going.
And it's that power of collaboration that you've spoken about a number of times, and synergy, the combination. So what I've really enjoyed, Tim, your colleague Tim Cole, came to our partner day and you know, happily chatting away with many members of the other partners, even some that work in businesses that are similar to yours, you know. And I was really struck by that this is the power of collaboration, this is the power of synergy, is that as we get together, we amplify the message. And I guess that's the part that we as the EV Cafe play with our partners, and one of such is Drax, and we're very grateful for the relationship we have with you guys. It makes a difference. Yeah, it makes a difference to us, but also gives us the opportunity to talk more loudly, more widely, hopefully removing the misinformation and the fluff and mm-hmm. get to the facts and the innovation and all of those good things and celebrate that.
Yeah.
And that's what we love to do. So
yeah, definitely what it's about.
So I'm taking it that you've waved the wand in our direction. So we'll just take some more of that magicness that helps
all
us.
My little fairy dust. Yeah, perfect.
little sprinkle to keep us going. Naomi, listen, I mean, have you got any final thoughts, things that you really were, you know, burning to share with us today? Or, you know, we covered off so many things, some exciting things, some lovely things.
If anything, Paul, I probably think that I've overshared, right? I've probably overshared a bit.
not even slightly. What I love is that I'm walking away from this wanting to know more. Next time we talk, you know, there's so many things that we've touched on around mental health and family and, you know, the things that actually make the world a good place, but that sometimes they're challenging thoughts and things. But the things that help make us a little bit more kind, I think. And I think that's something I'm
walking away from. It's what it's about, right? It's what it's about. Mm. You know, all this stuff, it's everything we're doing. I think, you know, it's very easy to forget when you're in a work environment, particularly in a sales environment, you kind of, you know, hey, you have targets and you have, you know, things you've got to meet. And I think it's easy to forget that we're all just people and we're all just, you know, trying to work together and we're all just trying to make things happen. And that's a lovely thing where I am now. You know, we really have that kind of sense of collaboration and culture and, you know, all that lovely stuff that goes with it. And I think that's why I love my job so much. I love the people I talk to. I love what I do. I love the feeling that, you know, I am making a difference, even if it's a tiny bit, because all those tiny bits add up, right? And that's what we need to hang on to.
What a perfect summary to end on. I'm very grateful for our conversation to a, if I say former most influential woman, I don't think that serves you well. I think an incredibly influential woman in our industry that has led by example for many, many years and has a real joined up holistic approach to life and work and this transition. And I've learned a lot today and I'm grateful for the time that we've had together. And everybody, listen, connect with Naomi. If you've listened to this podcast, I'm sure you too have found Naomi to be an incredibly interesting person, a person that you'd want to get to know and get connected with and follow on the journey that she's on, and perhaps get help from Drax and from the team there to make the transition for yourself. I think it makes a lot of sense. So please do reach out to her on LinkedIn. There'll be a link, no doubt, in our bio. Of course, there are many more conversations with lots of lovely people. Of course, nobody's quite as lovely as Naomi, but lots of other lovely people that we've spoken to over the last couple of years, actually. So head over to evcafe.org or Spotify or Apple and all those kinds of things and pick us up there. But in the meantime, thanks ever so much for listening. And Naomi, thank you. And thank you to your company for working with us so beautifully. And we look forward to many more conversations.
Paul. I've had a really good time. Thank you so much for having me. And I look forward to seeing you again very, very soon.
Excellent. Well, everybody, have a lovely day. Bye.